Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by Cashfly at cachefly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, November 18th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford and the new Ford Fiesta. With an EPA estimated 40 highway miles per gallon, no other compact car is more fuel efficient, and fuel economy is just for starters. The 2011 Ford Fiesta. Ford invites you to drive one at a dealer near you. And by the Eco-Imagination Challenge from GE. GE and its partners are awarding $200 million to ideas that help build the next generation power grid for the 21st century. For more information and to view and comment on ideas, go to Ecoimagination.com/challenge. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Dr. Kiki.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us today from wired.co.uk, their editor-in-chief, and I'd like to thank friend of the show, Nate Langson.
That's very, very kind of you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you doing?
Tired. And any word that sounds like tired that means tired, I'm it. The moment
you've so it's not just because it's late over there in the UK where you are, but you've been working hard relaunching the old Wired site, huh?
We have, yeah. We relaunched the site with a new design. We launched a podcast, and I've slept very little, and it's about 11 p.m. here. It's way past my bedtime. I even had a sleep between coming home from the office and being on the show. That's how tired I am. So excuse any inconsistencies.
That's where you went wrong. It was taking a nap.
Mm.
That can be a wrong turn
You didn't have to be on the show. I mean, I feel bad now. Like, I'm stealing your beauty sleep.
It's worth sleep to be on TNT.
Oh,
I love being here.
Stop.
I love you guys. Last time I was in the studio, it was fantastic.
I know. It was great having you out here. Well, let's get in the news. MySpace and Facebook had an announcement at noon today. And frankly, it was sort of like another announcement that happened in 1997. When Steve Jobs was on stage at Boston Macworld, do you remember this?
I happen to have a special guest with me today via satellite downlink. And if we could get him up on the stage right now.
Ah, yes. Made famous in Pirates of Silicon Valley, that moment. Today, Facebook and MySpace shared the stage, and MySpace said, "We're very happy to be part of Facebook Connect now."
Ouch.
And tried not to throw up while they said it.
Yes. Zuckerberg was nowhere in attendance.
No, it wasn't as dramatic as that,
yeah.
Sadly. I would love to have like a huge Zuckerberg on stage behind Tom. But that's not the way it happened. MySpace announced that they are going to integrate Facebook Connect. They're trying to be social entertainment, and as such, they're like, yeah, you're doing all this friending and liking on Facebook. Bring it on over. We'll have the feed show up on MySpace while you're looking at the celebrities and talking about the TV shows.
Maybe it'll make the experience better.
Yeah.
Or as
I sensed nothing extra in your voice when you said that. That was totally serious, right?
Yeah. I was thinking about this, and to be honest, I don't even recall what my MySpace password is. If I wanted to access it and see what's happening in MySpace, I don't even know. I'd have to start over, and that's not going to happen.
I think Michael Arantine may have put it best in the TechCrunch headline. Hell freezes over as MySpace fully surrenders to Facebook. And then he has a picture of the Japanese surrender in World War II.
I don't know if it's fully surrendering. I mean, at the end of the day, they're trying to make their business work. And you've got a site here with 500 million people with movies out about the site. I mean, when did MySpace have a movie? You know, I kind of think it's the right move. And MySpace is sort of in this position where they've got to say, you know what? Whatever, let's do this.
MySpace has been used to catch pedophiles, though.
It has, but yes. So is Facebook, I think.
Yeah.
Well, and there's the problem, right? Not the pedophile part, but think of something that you can do on MySpace, even now in their reinvented stage, that you can't do on Facebook. You can follow celebrities. You can find postings of music. If you're already on Facebook liking things, why wouldn't you just stay there to get your news? MySpace has got a tall order to say, hey, keep on using Facebook, but come here for extra stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, if you buy a CD, which is like an iTunes download, but on a disc, it always says MySpace. It's the band's MySpace. You don't see, you know, on Facebook as much as you see, you know, come and read the band on MySpace. So I don't know. There's life in MySpace yet.
Well, I think you're right that if they're going to win at something, it's going to be that heritage of music. And hopefully entertainment. Entertainment in general may be a little wide for them, but they have a huge music base. You're right. Julian Assange has been put under arrest, even though he wasn't around to feel it. The Stockholm District Court public prosecutor Marianne Nye requested that the court, quote, detain Mr. Assange in his absence for an investigation. This relates to the rape, sexual molestation, and unlawful coercion charges he faces that we talked about earlier this summer.
Yeah, this issue, I think, is a little strange. The argument here by Assange's lawyers is that this is just really bizarre and that he's never seen anything like it in 30 years of legal practice. Quote, we haven't been able to answer the specifics of the smear because the investigators won't detail the allegations and they haven't responded to Mr. Assange's voluntary offers of interview.
Yeah, so Assange, there's a lot of mistrust on both sides here. Yeah. Assange will do an interview, but he won't put himself where they can arrest him. And they're saying, no, we need you here in Sweden, in the courthouse, for us to question you. So that's why this order for detainment has come out. And this was, if you don't remember, this was a charge that was put into place, then it was dropped, and they said that it wasn't properly put into place. And then they put it back into place. And they've been after him ever since. And he has been, for many reasons, not just this, hard to track down.
Yeah. I can understand his fear. Oh, go ahead, Nick.
Sorry. I was going to say that, I mean, he's denied any wrongdoing here. I mean, he reckons it's a plot as a result of the US plot against WikiLeaks. And I actually think that this is a real problem for WikiLeaks because this story really has nothing to do with WikiLeaks. It's bad coincidence at best, but it reflects badly on WikiLeaks because of obviously his involvement. But, you know, he denies this flat out, basically.
Also denying things is Steve Wozniak. De Telegraaf newspaper in the Netherlands printed an admission that Apple had collaborated with a well-known Japanese consumer electronics company in 2004 to develop a phone, and then they abandoned the phone. But they also went on to quote Woz as saying that Android was going to win in the marketplace, that the iPhone has very few weak points, but he conceded that Android phones have more features and offer more choice for more people. Eventually, he thinks Android quality, consistency, and user satisfaction will match iOS. As soon as Wozniak read about this, he wrote in a comment on Engadget, like,
hold on,
that's not what I said. And Engadget, I thought, great job for Nilay Patel to get a hold of Woz on the phone after noticing the post in their comments and get him to explain himself. Here's a little bit of what they have posted up on Engadget.com.
At the end of 20 minutes, I said, well, there's, you know, the one thing I can't do that you can do on Android phones is you can say navigate to Joe's Diner or something. Right. And they don't, but then I pointed out that Apple had purchased Siri and they had purchased a mapping company, so it's likely to expect it in the iPhone. That's a long, you know, pointing out one thing that the Android does, that's that interpretation. I've never said anything like that to anyone.
So essentially what he's saying is, I pointed out that Android could do something on voice recognition that iPhone couldn't do, and the Telegraph kind of expanded upon that. Although he did go on to say that he does think that Android will end up being like Windows, in that they will have a larger share of the marketplace, but possibly the same problems that go along with that.
Larger share of the marketplace. And there was another story that didn't make it into the lineup today about Angry Birds showing the troubles of the Android operating system, just that it is so varied and it's, you know, there are so many different phones to get it on, so many devices, and there are just
Angry Birds is going to have to make a second version for lower powered Android phones because the regular version they made doesn't run well on certain phones.
Exactly. And that's going to be a problem that's going to stick with Android and make it difficult across the board, even though there are maybe more devices that run it.
Plus, I mean, does it really matter if Woz thinks Android's going to win? I mean, he doesn't work at Apple. I mean, I think he may have some sort of official association still, but he's his own man. He can say whatever he wants.
No, he can't.
Yeah, I think he's still on the payroll at Apple. I mean, he was pretty vocal about iOS. I mean, 2-3 years ago, he was saying that, you know, he was kind of looking for the hackers and, you know, the quote rebels, you know, and seeing what they were going to do with the iPhone. And, you know, he's been pretty vocal on both sides of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And if you want to hear about his thoughts on openness and what and his criticisms of Apple as far as openness, he talked about them on a special interview that Leo and I did a while back. You can find it in the specials area at twit.tv. Look for the Steve Wozniak interview from about a month ago, I think. He said, you know what? I think Apple is too closed, essentially. All right. Thanks to Ford for helping bring Tech News Today to you. As I've mentioned when we've been talking about this, they are committed to energy efficiency, to working on the environment. They cover their rooftops in succulents. Those are like cactus, right? Succulents, yes. those kinds of things. That helps keep their facility cooler in the summer. Their commitment to in the environment is not only in their facilities, but in their cars, too. The EcoBoost V6 engine is a 365-horsepower engine that is standard in the Taurus show. It delivers the power of a V8, but it does it with fuel injection. It makes it a lot more fuel efficient. There's also the 2011 Ford Fiesta. The car is the most fuel-efficient compact car on the road today. It has an EPA-estimated 40 highway miles per gallon. That's 40 highway miles per gallon. EPA estimated for just a Ford Fiesta. You might not think about it, but it's got very good fuel efficiency. Ford has been an innovator through the decades, from the assembly line of Henry Ford back in the 1900s to all the innovations they bring to the market today. The EcoBoost engine in the Taurus show and the fuel-efficient 2011 Fiesta are worth checking out. And, of course, voice-activated Ford Sync, the in-car communication and connectivity system you hear us talk about. We invite you to stop by a dealer and drive a new Taurus show or Ford Fiesta this week. See what they're all about. See the tech in the cab. Look at that fuel efficiency for yourself. See what innovations at Ford are all about. An interesting P2P case is being tried by the Solicitor's Journal. I'm sorry, not the Solicitor's Journal. It's being tried by the Solicitor's Disciplinary Tribunal in the United Kingdom, Nate. This is Davenport Lyons. One of the lawyers, one of the solicitors from Davenport Lyons, went on to become part of a little firm called ACS Law. You heard of them?
I may have heard of them. They may have been quite vocal in the fight against piracy.
And come under some controversy recently about sending out letters to people and try to browbeat them into settling out of court. Davenport Lyons blazed that trail.
Yeah, they did. And now two people from that firm are facing accusations that they proceeded recklessly by seeking payments from thousands of people based solely on an IP address, which, as we know, does not identify a person.
Well, and that's where the Solicitor's Journal comes in. They have obtained the statement of claim against the two lawyers from Davenport Lyons. And the claim essentially says that they only identified IP holders whose IP numbers had been used for downloading or uploading of materials and did not acknowledge that they could be in generic campaigns, could be hacked, could be Wi-Fi that was open. All kinds of reasons this stuff could have happened on that IP address. But the lawyers proceeded with the settlement letters anyway, asking the internet subscribers to cough up the cash and did it in a way that appeared as if they were doing it just for the money, which could bring them up on charges with the tribunal. Firm represented several clients, mostly video game publishers, and it saw a 20-35% response rate to its letters. They never sued anybody, but they made a lot of money.
Sure, they got a lot of responses from it.
The Davenport Lyons guys said the firm dropped cases when it was satisfied that somebody was innocent. So people have, you know, they fought back and said, look, you know, my Wi-Fi's open or, you know, this is a printer. I mean, printers have IP addresses. We've seen this in courts before now. And they have dropped cases in under those circumstances. But, I mean, the whole suing people based on IP is ridiculous. And, you know, looking, being devil's advocate here and looking at this situation from the perspective of rights holders and people who own copyright, you can sort of say, well, how are we supposed to win? You know, how are we supposed to win? The only thing we can identify people on here is IP address, and you know, we could look at MAC addresses, things like that, but it does not account for people accessing on an open Wi-Fi network. Unless you make open Wi-Fi networks illegal, you know, in order to prevent this kind of stuff, which will never happen, then it's really difficult to pursue it. So on the one hand, I can kind of, you know, guess why we're going here. I heard a bit of music then.
Yeah, I think the thing here is that no one was ever actually sued. So it's just trying to get at these at the respondents before a suit would be brought and just be like, if you pay us, we won't sue you.
Yeah.
It's kind of underhanded.
We can leave aside for the moment what the copyright laws should be, because there's a huge debate to be had about what should in fact be protected and what should be illegal and everything.
Right.
But assuming that we all agree that there ought to be some sort of copyright for something, how do you enforce it? That's a really good question, Nate. How do you find someone who is violating copyright if not by IP address?
Well, you know what? I kind of think you can't. This is one of the things where laws have to be rewritten purely because we're now existing in a place where you have the internet, you have IP addresses. I mean, these aren't new things, but in terms of law, they still are. I mean, you know, we never legislated against things like mobile phones in cars, which I know we're going to talk about in a bit, back when everyone was riding horses. So laws have to be rewritten. And there comes a point where you say, you know, we literally cannot pinpoint who is doing this, so we can't sue somebody. You know, I mean, you don't convict someone on a murder case if you don't know who committed the murder. There will come a point where we have to basically say, we don't know who's doing this. And at the moment, it's kind of murky and they can still get away with it by suing based on IP address. And it's not going to stand up. And clearly it isn't doing, you know.
Yeah. And the problem with IP addresses is it's tempting to say like, it's 90% certain. I mean, most of the time that IP address is going to be that one machine that one person used. But the fact of the matter is, that's not enough to guarantee.
No, but you know, that's the thing, you get a threatening letter through the door and someone says, we suspect you've been downloading music. And if you know that you actually have been downloading music illegally and someone says, pay us £500 or $1,000 or whatever, they think, well, I know I'm guilty. These people think I'm guilty. I'm just going to pay up and move out. And that's generally how most of these cases are settled. It's very small out-of-court fees. Very, very few of these percentage-wise actually go to court. You know, it generally works. And so people are quite happy with that at the moment.
But it may work a lot of times where people didn't actually violate the law. They're just too scared or too poor to fight back. So then,
yeah, and there was the case,
and there's the fear.
Sorry, go ahead, Kiki.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that there's the general fear of just a suit being brought against you and not being able to afford the costs of a suit being brought against you, and you think you don't know that you haven't done anything, but if you do have open Wi-Fi, what if your nephew did do something, or what if your neighbor did do something?
And it's, right, and who's liable? And then is it? Are you responsible because it's your computer?
Yeah, and is because it's open Wi-Fi. Are you responsible because
you're
not locking it down?
Right.
You know, is there that kind of a responsibility that is put into it, but that we just, as you said, Nate, that we don't have written into law yet?
Exactly.
We've got a couple other devices headed towards your television now. Steve Perlman, chief executive of OnLive, has been showing off their micro console in Palo Alto. They announced they're taking pre-orders for a $99 micro console for the OnLive. OnLive, if you don't know, is software, or it's actually a service, runs in a browser that allows you to play any kind of video game on any kind of machine that can surf the web. I say any kind of machine. There are certain stipulations. It has to have enough power to actually run the video, and it has to have the right inputs so that you can control everything. But all the video processing, the huge video cards, are all on the other end. So to penetrate this farther, they're actually coming out with this mini console that's only $99 because it doesn't need a lot of hardware, and selling that. So you pay $99 for that, then you pay for the subscription to OnLive, and you have access to, theoretically, an unlimited number of video games.
Right now, it's only about 25 or 35 games.
Yeah. And I've played it. I've played it. It's not bad. I have high enough bandwidth at home.
That's the thing. What is it, 5 megabit?
Yeah. Well, I've got more than that.
Yeah,
so I don't know
if
they say 5 megabits per second, but I haven't tried it at 5 megabits per second to see if it actually works.
Yeah.
But with 50 megabits per second, I was able to play a game as if I were playing a real game. I'll admit, it didn't look as nice as it would look on a really souped-up gaming machine.
Little encoding artifacts.
Yeah, you know, just like any kind of video streaming. Yeah. But it looked good. I mean,
But just acceptable? Just acceptable? Or good? Or great?
I would say good. Definitely more than acceptable, but yeah, not great.
I would imagine at that point it's more imperative that it keeps up with the speed of play than it represents every single little pixel that you expect to see mm-hmm. out of a normal game.
Yeah.
And it, because then you can still get the fun playable factor out
and
of it.
If you're playing group games of any kind, I can see that this, aside from maybe differences in the bandwidth that individuals would have, it kind of gets away from individuals' better machines, the gaming machines mm-hmm. that different people tweak to different speeds, try overclocking and various things to be able to have their advantage over their competitors. In this case, it kind of levels the playing field, so it might actually be a little bit better for that.
You have to be within 1,000 miles of one of their servers to be able to take advantage of the service too, because they're running over the internet, but they want to make sure that they're running over a good connection, that you're close enough that you're not going to experience a lot of lag, because as soon as you experience some lag, you're done with this thing.
I'm just amazed that the game companies are okay with this. Like, that they've actually been able to strike deals to be able to do this.
Why wouldn't they?
With the subscription.
I don't know, because it's kind of like buying a book and then... Yeah, no, I guess it's subscription. I guess it's the same
Netflix
model. But yeah. I don't know. It's just such a change for the game.
A total change. I mean, I don't think the game companies would be upset. I think it would be more so the consoles companies, the manufacturers. In terms of the games, with the subscription price, certain percentage of that is going to go to the game company every person, mm-hmm. every month, and they're going to make more money probably than selling an individual game probably at sale price through GameStop or whatever company you're going to buy your games.
Also coming to your television is an Orb TV box, a small streaming unit from the company Orb Networks. Now, if you haven't heard of Orb, they make software that's kind of like a TVersity or a PlayOn that allows you to stream video from your computer to your television. This actually allows you to view it remotely, kind of like a Slingbox, but you had to have your computer hooked up to your television. This new Orb TV streaming unit for, guess what, $99, is a little hockey puck you hook up. Then you have the server software running on your computer, and it can be in any room in the house. As long as they're on the same network, this little device will stream anything you get off your computer to your TV. So the key advantage here is they're not going to block this. You can get Hulu. You can get ESPN3 if that works on your ISP. You can get whatever you would get in your browser, because it's just taking the video that plays in your browser and transferring it to your television in another room. On the negative side, it's only standard def.
Yeah, no HD.
And only over Wi-Fi.
Right.
Fail. Is that a bit like Slingbox? Or Apple TV, the new Apple TV?
It's like Sling Catcher, actually. Sling Catcher does pretty much the same thing. Where it takes your computer and streams it up to the television for you without you having to have the computer right there. But the fact that it has all of the stuff means that service-wise, it's ahead of everyone. Because one of the things, okay, if you got a Roku with Hulu Plus and Netflix now, you don't necessarily get AMC.com. You don't necessarily get ComedyCentral.com. And these things are not available in Hulu or Netflix.
Or the UK.
They would, well... You're in the biggest firewall. We don't get the iPlayer, man.
No, you are. You're going to get it soon.
You're going to get Netflix and Hulu, too. They said they're looking at international. We'll see when any of that stuff actually happens.
We have proxies.
But the point is, with Orb, you would actually be able to get that. You'd actually be able to go to ComedyCentral.com. You'd be able to go to all of these sites, presumably if you're in the United States. Yeah. If you're not overseas. It's good to have you here to keep us honest, Nate.
Exactly.
Well, I have to be honest.
All right. Let's move on to the U.S. Secretary of Transportation, Ray LaHood, saying on Wednesday to the Daily Caller, quote, "I think the technology is there, and I think you're going to see the technology become adaptable in automobiles to disable these cell phones." Referring to a plan to require car manufacturers to include scrambling tech that would disable mobile phone use by drivers and perhaps passengers.
Yeah.
Oh, great. What happens when I crash my car?
Then you just have to be expected to drag yourself out of your wrecked vehicle and then make the call outside.
Right, right.
How far from your car are you going to have to drag yourself before the jamming technology allows you to make that phone call to the emergency number?
Uh-huh.
That makes a whole lot of sense.
But this seems a little bit misplaced, especially with so many vehicles with hands-free technology that are being built into the vehicle. Yeah. You know, so many cars have Bluetooth now that you just have your little earbud, or it's a just speakerphone, whatever it happens to be, and you just get in your car and it works.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's a moot point at this point.
What about the poor kids? They're bored. They're not driving.
Well, and that's the other thing. Is this gonna...
Give the teenager the cell phone, please. Seriously.
Is this going to block data, too? Is this going to actually keep us from using, you know, from streaming Pandora?
Yeah. Yeah. No Pandora in the car. That's a really good question. Would we not be able to listen to the Twit TV app on your phone?
You know, maybe at the point that they get to here, when they get to that point, maybe there's some added technology in the phone that says certain things are not possible within the car.
Let me say flat out.
With certain conditions.
I don't think you should be talking on the phone in the car, hands-free or otherwise. Unless you really absolutely have to, maybe hands-free for a very short period of time, but you should be focused on the road. You should keep your eyes on the road.
To be honest, there is a study that came out recently saying that your driving is impaired. Your driving is impaired by when somebody else in the car is talking on a phone and you're listening to them.
Yeah, because you're only hearing one side. Anytime you're only hearing one side of a conversation, right? Yeah. That it makes your brain work harder.
Right.
And you need to be focusing. But at the same time, I don't think you make the car break technology to do that.
Right.
I don't think that is a good idea. At all.
I
think there's a lot of unintended consequences that would come to light as a result of something like that.
Yeah, especially as phones start using data connections to make voice calls more and more, mm-hmm. if we start getting more and more VoIP call, you can't differentiate. Yeah. It's just an example of, you know what, it is bad, but we can't force people we can't break their technology to do it. I mean, should the government install governors on every car that prevent it from going over 65 miles an hour or whatever your local speed limit is?
Yes, and we should make all cars fully autonomous.
Yes.
People shouldn't have to drive at all. Just let the cars drive.
Actually, I'm not.
I mean, come on. I
welcome that. Absolutely. All right, let's take another quick break. Let you know this episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by the $200 million Ecomagination Challenge from GE. It's a new program for entrepreneurs, business innovators, and students. They have $200 million burning a hole in their pocket for your great idea for improving the way energy is produced, transferred, and consumed. Here are the three categories. Renewables. GE wants to encourage better ways to integrate renewable energy into our power grid. The more energy we get in the grid, the better, folks. Wind, water, sun, whatever you've got. GE's second investment category is grid efficiency. They want to convert the smart grid to digital energy to improve transparency at every step of the grid, to reduce waste. You know, we're going to be spending all this money creating power. We don't want to just waste it. And to give more choices to the consumers and energy service providers themselves. And the third category is eco homes and buildings. Energy consumption is growing so quickly, it's creating an imbalance between demand and supply. So we can help on that end as well. GE wants to give you money to help these categories. So they're making $200 million available to invest in each of these areas. To learn more and read the ideas and comment on them, go to ecomagination.com/challenge. We thank GE for supporting Tech News Today, as well as Kiki's Green Tech Today.
Yep.
That's that show. When can people catch that show?
People can catch it Monday afternoons here on the Twit Network. I think it's at 1:30.
Okay. 1:30 Pacific.
Pacific time.
Somewhere's around there.
The thing is, it's not a live show. It's pre-produced, so I'm not actually here when it broadcasts.
Right,
so
exactly.
I'm like... I have to look at the calendar.
Just subscribe to it. Just subscribe to it in iTunes.
Subscribe.
Go to twit.tv and subscribe to it that way. We thank GE for their support of Tech News Today and Green Tech Today.
Absolutely.
Time now for the News Fuse. This is the message explodes before it gets read in this case. The U.S. Air Force and the U.S. Army troops have been warned to be careful using sites like Facebook on GPS-enabled devices like their BlackBerries because new location services like Facebook Places could inadvertently reveal troop locations to the enemy. The warning was posted on an internal website and sent to commanders concerning new technology allowing users to pinpoint their location on the map.
Dell is doing okay in these troubled times. The company reported earnings that killed the street's expectations, though sales fell a bit short of them. The PC maker reported a profit of 45 cents a share on revenue of $15.4 billion. Analysts had expected it to report 32 cents per share on $15.7 billion. Insert your own dude, you're getting joke here.
Dude, you're getting money.
Yeah.
Dude, you're getting earnings.
Dude,
the joke's getting old.
Well, Joan Jett may not give a damn about her bad reputation. That was a joke. But Twitter does. Twitter co-founder Evan Williams said the company calculates a reputation score for every user, which the company uses internally as a part of its who to follow formula. That score may eventually become part of Twitter's public facing features.
Yeah, I don't give a darn about my Twitter reputation.
I don't give a darn at all.
This is a pretty good song.
I do like being a...
Your camera may soon come with a SIM card. The GSM Association said a task force of members including AT&T, Verizon, Vodafone, China Mobile, and Deutsche Telekom have been working on adapting SIM cards so they can be embedded in many more devices than just phones. Carrier plans are going to have to get a lot more flexible if they expect people to have multiple devices on a data plan, but it would be nice to just be able to upload your shots right from your camera without having to use Wi-Fi.
Oh, I would like that. Who do you believe?
Mm.
India or RIM? Mm,
neither.
Neither, yeah. A senior official from India's home ministry said that an agreement is near that would give the Indian government access to the encrypted data on RIM's BlackBerry Enterprise service. RIM officially calls that statement inaccurate and misleading. But not wrong, RIM? RIM firmly states that they have not and will not change current security policies for India or anyone.
All right.
Stick to your guns, RIM.
Stick to your rims, gun.
Yeah, stick to your rims, gun. That's good.
Well, right this instant, someone, somewhere, is enjoying sex.com because Escom has finally sold the domain for $13 million through a deal brokered by Cedo, or maybe Cedo, I'm not quite sure. Following an order from bankruptcy court, Escom bought sex.com in 2006 for $12 million plus $2 million in equity and had hoped it could get $20 million from a buyer. They found themselves unsatisfied, I'm afraid.
Sorry. Often happens. Want to use your new Windows phone as a USB drive? The fine folks at MobileTechWorld.com report that you can turn your Windows phone into a mountable drive by modifying just three entries in the registry of your Windows desktop PC. Once done, you'll be able to drag and drop files from the phone to that computer and any other Windows machine with the modified registry settings.
Cool. I just got back from the LA Auto Show, where Toyota launched an all-electric version of its latest RAV4. And this one is apparently powered by Tesla. The RAV4 EV is on the fast track to production with the combined forces of Toyota's Technical Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and a team from Tesla Motors. The partnership will build 35 Phase Zero test versions of the latest RAV4 EV next year, with production launch expected in 2012. Unfortunately, even with the cool factor of the Tesla, it's still a RAV4.
Aww. Kiki doesn't like the RAV4.
What gave you that idea?
All right. Finally, a student at MIT's personal robotics group has... we're getting so many cool Microsoft Kinect hacks. This one puts Kinect to good use controlling robots. Philip Robble hacks together the Kinect 3D sensor with the iRobot Create platform.
Awesome.
They're the makers of the Roomba, and the Create is their sort of like DIY platform. Assembled a battery-powered bot that can see its environment and obey gestured commands. So it reads sign language, kind of a sort.
Forward, robot.
Go. You can do this.
you can pretend you're trying to traffic airplanes with a little orange safety... whatever they're called.
And it looks like a more menacing robot with the Kinect mounted up.
Use natural gestures to direct mobile.
There, robot.
The video shows a guy just kind of pointing. He points in a direction, and then the robot can see that the way that with using the hacked Kinect.
And it goes over there.
Drives over there, yeah.
Get over there, robot.
Now does our bidding.
Now you have to figure out what the natural gestures are for a robot. Get me a beer.
Or
that would be something like.
Or robot, stop. Back away.
Back away, robot.
Put down the knife.
For the audio listeners, there are a lot of hands in the air in the Twitch.
Yeah, we're not just being silent.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Emily.
All right, on to the calendar.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the calendar. The Kin1M and the Kin2M.
Oh, your calendar's going nuts today.
The Kin1M and the Kin2M have arrived at Verizon. They're totally different than the Kin1 and Kin2.
Just like Thing1 and Thing2 are totally different.
Kin1 and Kin2 have an M at the end of their name.
Right.
Otherwise, they're exactly the same.
So the Kin Onum and the Kim Twom?
The Onum.
The Onum Twom.
The Onum and the Twom.
You can get the Onum for $19.99 with a 2-year contract. The Twom costs just under $50. You get Zune Pass, still present, Wi-Fi, side loan only. Plans start at $40 a month. We have no idea why, but they're back. Palm Pre 2, available unlocked from HP for $450, ships within 24 hours. So if you'd like to use that phone on whatever network you want that supports the network, chip that's built into the Palm Pre 2, then $450. The Dell Inspiron Duo finally officially can be yours, starting the first week of December for $549 with all its glowy, netbooky goodness.
I just want to spin the screen.
Yeah,
does it just spin?
If you haven't seen it has a screen in the middle that rotates separately from the frame.
It just looks breakable.
Which is great
it
if you want to like
more breakable
close
than a normal
it and
laptop.
Turn it into a tablet and look at the screen on the outside without it being open. I mean, it makes sense.
Totally unique 10.1-inch netbook hybrid tablet, 2 gigabytes of RAM, Intel Atom N550 processor, 250 gigabytes of storage, and Windows 7 Home Premium. And then there's some options that'll get you different, up to $649, $549, but shipping in December. So that one's pretty tempting. I kind of got a little gadget lust for that one. Jason, you pointed out changes to the Android marketplace to begin rolling out this evening ahead of Gingerbread.
Yeah, just a few changes, which they think is signaling possibly the long-awaited web version of the marketplace. But, just some added context, basically, around the apps. Links to a YouTube video, higher resolution screenshots, feature graphic, higher resolution icon, things like that to spruce it up.
All right.
Any way to add more context to those posts.
On to the voicemails, 260-TNT show. Our call today just asked us to think of the children.
Hey, TNT crew. This is Justin, IT Tech in Long Beach, California. When I was growing up, the biggest fear parents had in children's made-up games was boys and girls deciding to play doctor. Could it be that this age-old game is finally fading into our past, allowing parents to breathe a sigh of relief? Oh, no, wait. Now they're playing TSA Screener and Traveler. And for no other reason than this, we must stop the TSA. Think of the kids. Love the show.
Bobby asked me to play Airport. Yes.
Yeah. Really? I don't know.
Did anyone ever
worry about that?
Play doctor when they were a kid?
Is this something we admit to at this point in time?
Spin the bottle?
I know. By not admitting, there's a cricket. It's good. Yes,
I believe that's what you get.
So watch out for your kids playing Airport. That's that's the upshot of this. On to the emails, TNT at twit.tv.
Okay. Hey, TNT crew. Just listened to podcast 120. In discussing the leaked 36 minutes of Harry Potter, you mentioned a similar leaking of Tron Legacy. A few weeks ago, there was something called Tron Night where they screened a 20-minute preview of the film. Not sure if there was a similar extended preview of Harry Potter, but that could be one explanation. Love the show. Haven't missed an episode yet. Paolo,
actually,
DLR.
I think it was on Twitter where someone at replied me and said that there was a promotional screening like that. Now, the thing is that the leaked version looked like it came off of a screener DVD, though. But maybe it was the DVD used to play the short preview thing. So it all sorts starts to come together there. All right. Finally, Rinbrand from the chat room, who is most, I'm guessing, properly pronounced Rinnisbrand. Let me know if that's incorrect. Says, I know this isn't really a current topic, but a strange phenomenon has appeared here in South Africa, and I couldn't help but wonder if this is just a local thing. The three carriers here have been pushing BlackBerries very aggressively, especially the lower-end Curve models. Well, that could be just that they're trying to get rid of the Curves, but he says, one can get a Curve on contract now for relatively cheap, including free data on the BIS access point. Because mobile data is so expensive, this is a big lure. Also, because of free email and BlackBerry Messenger, it has become very popular with the female population. As anecdotal evidence, my wife recently got one, and all her friends at work recently upgraded their contracts to get BlackBerries as well. They continue to communicate after hours on BlackBerry Messenger, something they really only did via Facebook until recently. Also, all of them are now a lot more active on Facebook and Twitter via mobile. This is counter to the notion that BlackBerries are business phones, which are only used by businessmen. What's also interesting is that these friends of my wife upgraded from Nokia and Samsung LG feature phones. Does this mean that instead of taking on the smartphone market, BlackBerry is looking to take over the feature phone space? Interesting anecdotal evidence there, but it could still just be a tactic to get rid of lower-end phones like the Curve. If they have a market glut of them, but the free data plan is really pushing it.
Yeah, that's really pushing. I mean, that's quite a carrot if that's what they're putting out there to get people to get to buy these cheaper phones.
What do you think, Nate? Do you think this is just kind of a temporary marketing thing, or is this a trend for RIM? Are they testing something here?
You know, this is what's weird, is that on the tubes and trains in the morning, I see more young girls and young guys with BlackBerries than I ever used to see. It never used to be this many. I used to see only people in suits with BlackBerries and people without suits with Nokias and iPhones or whatever. And now I see more younger people and, you know, people outside of suits with BlackBerries. So I'm not sure. I think something's going on here.
Well, RIM probably needs to do that one way or another, you know?
Like
expand out,
get out of
the
market.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they have been doing. I mean, a lot of the networks over here sort of will sell things like the you know, the BlackBerry Pearl, stuff like that, with free data and free email and free access to Facebook and email, stuff like that. And they really appeal. You know, so many friends of mine that I know over here have BlackBerries, but they're not business people. They're just, you know, people who don't want iPhones.
Business people are now the people who own iPhones.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. The world is turning topsy-turvy now.
It is, you know, the business people in the suits who need to play Angry Birds while on the train.
Right. Yeah. Take their minds off their crashing investments.
Well, like me.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Nate Langston, for being on the show. Wired.co.uk is your domain. What's going on over there before we leave?
It is that. That's our domain. Apart from my Angry Birds iPhone case, which I'm very, very happy with at the moment. It's the future of cases. we have a new podcast, which I'd love you guys to check out at wired.co.uk/podcast. It's basically a little bit like this, but I don't know, British. Yeah, we're doing some tech stuff.
Is it weekly or daily or...?
It's a weekly podcast. Okay. We're weekly only at the moment. And I'd love you guys to check it out. We've had 3 episodes so far. 2 of them you can listen to. The first one, that's never getting heard. That's just never getting heard.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Sadly lost the first episode of Buzz Out Loud Molly and I ever recorded. Oops.
Yeah.
Gone. It's funny how
totally not at all deliberate mistakes happen, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we have that going on, and so wired.co.uk is our web address, and I'm on at Nate Langston on Twitter, and that stuff.
All right. Thank you for staying up in your sleep-deprived state to be with us. We really appreciate it, Nate. It's always great having you on the show.
It's great to be here. Really great to be here.
Don't forget, you can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us at tnt@twit.tv and call us 260-TNT-SHOW, and... So you don't think I'm rude. It's always great having Kiki on Thursdays, too.
Aw, thanks.
Yeah. So watch Dr. Kiki's Science Hour and This Week in Science at Green Tech, okay?
Yeah.
See you tomorrow.
Do it.